Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome back to Wednesday Breakfast. You're here with Squirrel and Regan in the studio. And joining us this morning, we have Greens member for Melbourne, Ellen Sandel.
Hi.
Good morning, Ellen.
Morning. It's a bit early, but we've got to get used to that,
it is.
I guess.
You got here. That's the most important thing. And also Nick Carson, who's the national convener of the Australian Student Environment Network. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
Joining us on the line is Wendy Farmer, president of Voices of the Valley. Have we got Wendy here with us?
You do, yes.
Fantastic. And also joining us is author of Climate Code Red, David Spratt. Can we hear David?
Good morning.
Good morning. Oh, we've got all of us here. That's very impressive.
Four out of four.
I'm very impressed by what we've managed this morning. So I wanted to start off. What we are discussing this morning is the transition plans that are being put forward for Hazelwood. I guess to start us off, probably to get some background, would be to just get something from Ellen about the Greens campaign that's being launched, Replace Hazelwood. Can you just give a bit of background about what that is about?
Well, in 2010, right before the last state election, the Labor Premier John Brumby actually came out and said that he was for the closure of the Hazelwood Power Station, and Labor put forward a plan for stage closure and transition for that community. And unfortunately, now that they're back in power, they seem to have conveniently forgot about that promise. So what we're doing as the Greens is putting pressure on them to remind them that Hazelwood is the dirtiest power station in the country. There's incredible health impacts in the community because of it, and also, of course, climate change impacts. And therefore, we do need to replace Hazelwood with clean energy. But what we're also calling for is a transition plan, because we know that the community has suffered a lot through the privatisation of the energy system, and there's high unemployment in the Latrobe Valley. And so in the 2015 budget, the Labor government really needs to put some money forward for a community-led transition plan so that community has some certainty. We know Hazelwood is going to close and that coal's on the way out. There's two choices. We can do it in a way that just leaves the community stranded, or we can do it in a proper way that transitions people to sustainable jobs.
Yeah, sure. And has Labor officially outlined their position, other than the statement that was put out in 2010 that Hazelwood was going to be closed? Have they kind of put forward an alternative position, or are they just kind of flying blind at the moment?
They are flying blind. So my first question in Parliament was to the Minister for Energy, asking whether they would honour their 2010 promise. And they equivocated and said, oh, you know, we're not quite sure, kind of thing. Mm. And so that's why we actually need to put the pressure on Labor. We need to remind them. We need to show them that there is community support for action on climate change, and in particular for replacing our dirtiest power stations.
Yeah. And you were putting forward a statement tomorrow in Parliament. Was that right?
That's right. So tomorrow at 12:30 on the steps of Victorian Parliament, hundreds of people will be gathering to say that they want Hazelwood to be replaced. And we've got speakers from talking about the health impacts, talking about the climate change impacts, talking about the community, and I'll be making a statement in Parliament at the same time.
Yep, great. Fantastic. Okay, I wanted to hear from David next. David, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi, fantastic. I just wanted to ask you, you're the author of Climate Code Red, but I understand that you're also involved not only looking at climate change impacts, but at particular policy options that that are presented to us in the Latrobe Valley. I just wanted to get a bit more of an idea of what is being put forward as the transition plan. What are the policy options which are being discussed?
Well, look, I think, the climate movement has tried to grapple with this for a long time. I mean, the first three climate national grassroots climate summits I went to, they're all panels on this issue as far back as 2008. Greenpeace had a report done on transition plans in the Hunter Valley. I think the big problem is going from the principle of saying we want just transitions, like saying we want a fair society, going from the principle to the reality and the practicality, both of what the plan is and how you find the political power to actually implement it. And I think the most concrete thing that's happened is a real step forward is partly as a result of the terrible fires and work that was done by Environment Victoria and the unions, I mean, it's now clear that the mines in their present state will continue to be fire hazards because they haven't been rehabilitated. That is, that the coal is still open to the atmosphere. Soil hasn't been put over the top. They haven't been repaired, and the fire, with climate change, the fire problem will get worse. So there, I think, is quite wide agreement that a rehabilitation for the a rehabilitation plan for the mines will be a really concrete step forward. Environment Victoria says that for Hazelwood, that's probably going to cost $200 million. At the moment, the owners of the mine have to put a bond with the government for rehabilitation, but that's only $15 million. And they actually don't have to give the government the money. It's just a bank guarantee. So one of the steps that, you know, I hope will happen out of the reconvened Royal Commission on the Fires is a decision by the minister to up that bond really substantially towards the cost of it, and to find other monies, for example, the brown coal, so-called clean coal projects, which have got $100 million at the moment, and move that towards rehabilitation. Now, I know rehabilitation is not the whole of the issue, but it is one concrete step that most people seem to think is necessary and fundable.
I just wanted to clarify those figures. So you said that the current bond that's put forward by the mining companies is 15, and the cost is $200 million. Was that right?
Yeah, well, Environment Victoria put out a report at the end of the last year available on the website that said they think the overall cost is about $200 million per mine in the valley.
So does that mean if the bond isn't increased that there's a very high likelihood that the company won't go ahead with the required rehabilitation?
Well, I mean, they have a work plan which says they don't have to do it to the end because they won't spend money that doesn't immediately make them money. They're sitting on their hands. And we've seen, as with Port Augusta in South Australia, the companies will simply close these facilities down and walk away with the minimum that they need to do. And that's a threat for every oil power station in Australia. Mm. So I think the really important issue is for that bond to be increased now. It just becomes a condition of the licence. The minister has the power to increase the bond, as I understand it. It doesn't require an act of parliament. And start on that work now because, I mean, the fire risk will be there every year. I mean, the station is supposed to run till 2031. Nobody thinks it will, but, I mean, there could be another fire incident, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years' time unless the rehabilitation work starts now, not just when the mine closes. And, you know, there will be several hundred jobs in that.
And there was no change to the bond following the Hazelwood fires last year?
Not from the former government. I understand the present government, and perhaps one of the things, the Royal Commission, which met last year, has been asked by the Andrews government to meet again, and it's we'll reconvene next month in May, and they're going to look at the health issues and whether there were the question of excess deaths in the valley as a consequence, and will be as a consequence of the fire, but also the bond issue and rehabilitation of the mine should be on that reconvened inquiry as well.
Sure. Okay. Thanks for that, David. I might go to Wendy now.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks. So I just wanted to introduce you, Wendy, first. So Wendy's the president of Voices of the Valley, and I just before you start, I wanted to hear from you what Voices of the Valley is.
Okay, Voices of the Valley was set up during the mine fires when we felt that nobody was listening to the people of Latrobe Valley. We had a fire for 2 weeks and nothing seemed to have been done. We were being smoked out. So Voices of the Valley were just a community group of people that had never met before that got together and said, we can't sit around and do nothing any longer.
Okay. And so what I've seen recently released to environment groups and climate action groups was a statement by Voices of the Valley kind of reiterating that the community's concerns aren't necessarily being heard in campaigns that are focusing on closing down Hazelwood. Can you perhaps expand on this?
This is correct. So we decided to write to all the groups that are trying to close down the power stations and sort of explain a little bit about Latrobe Valley. Alan sort of said about transition, and yes, transition's really important, and that's what we're looking at. You know, the community needs something to move to rather away from. So we need to create jobs in Latrobe Valley before we can actually move away. I know Alan had a little bit of a Twitter going on with Darren Chester, who basically said, well, if you close Hazelwood, all we're going to have is Centrelink. And I thought that was a little bit blindsided for a politician to actually not have any goal to look at. Voices of the Valley are really pushing for new industries, new ways of creating jobs in Latrobe Valley, and we know remediation of the mine will be one of them. At the moment, Hazelwood employs about 550 people. It actually brings into our community $100 million a year. When all the power stations were privatised in Latrobe Valley, we lost a lot of jobs and we sacrificed a lot for providing electricity through private companies. We need people to understand that it's not a matter of just walking in and closing down a power station or any power station, because we feel that it's really important to the people of this community to have some sort of job. That was one of the reasons we decided to write to the environment groups, the green groups, and say, how about we stop calling for Hazelwood to be closed down, but we start calling for new industries, new jobs in Latrobe Valley. Then people will have places, you know, people will move into different positions and we won't need Hazelwood. We believe Hazelwood is on borrowed time anyway. As Alan said, it was to be closed down in 2010. A lot of the maintenance and things that happen in the mine aren't up to scratch. So we actually don't think it will go for forever anyway. When we spoke to Russell North a few weeks ago, and he said, well, they're actually commissioned to run for another 15 years. We actually challenged him and said we didn't think it would run that long. But if it did, even in 15 years, if it was to close down, what do we leave Latrobe Valley?
Mm.
Now, saying that, we understand that, you know, the people, I think I used before, sacrifice part of their life for living in Latrobe Valley. It looks like we live about 4 years less. And that was without a disaster that we had with the Hazelwood mine fire, when we had governments just completely ignore us.
Yeah.
But we need these Melbourne groups that want to, you know, come into Latrobe Valley and say, shut them down, to understand what is actually happening, you know, with us. We believe there is strength in unity and cooperation. Working's call for, Working's call for and create a fair plan to transition to a cleaner future is highly important. However, we will not get behind campaigns to close down power stations here. The consequences for us and our community are far too great. We call on all groups to consider our needs and our challenges. We are more than happy to meet with you, share our perspectives and hear yours. We call on you to work with us, not against us.
Okay, thank you so much, Wendy. So what I'm hearing is that there's possibly some divergence in the focus that's being placed on different campaigns. I just wanted to go to Nick now to talk about just transitions and perhaps outline what that is. Nick?
Yeah. Well, ASEN, as a national network of student environment collectives around the country, like, we've, in the last, let's say, like, 4 or 5 years, we've been really focusing a lot more on just transition. So ASEN is involved in a lot of direct action stuff, and we've been in positions in, you know, the past few decades, you know, in direct conflict with workers at coal mines or in the forest or whatever it might be. And so being at the coalface, so to speak, of that confrontation, I suppose we've been, really thinking about this sort of stuff from quite an early stage, back when there was big, like, shutdown Hazelwood protests in the valley, sort of 2008, 2009, 2010. And since then, like, the dominant narrative within our network and many other environment groups has completely switched from let's shut these power stations down to just transitions is the most important thing, that we have alternatives funded and resourced and supported and advocated for before power stations close down or mines close down or whatever industry it is. So just transitions for us is now the most important thing that we consider whenever we're running a campaign, whenever we're planning a direct action or something like that.
Okay, great. Thanks, Nick. So, Ellen, did you just want to quickly respond to what's been said here?
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and the Greens absolutely agree we need just transitions. And the fact of the matter is Hayswood needs to close, and we need to call for it to close because it has incredible health impacts on the community as well as climate change impacts. But Wendy's absolutely right. We need something for those people to go to, and it's incredibly short-sighted of some of those national politicians like Russell North or Darren Chester who say, oh, well, coal will just last forever, and they're in complete denial, as Wendy said. The mines aren't going to stay open forever, but we do actually need to replace them very quickly because climate change is becoming more and more urgent. And we're past the point at which we really should have shut these power stations down. And the fact is we live in a rich country and we cannot have the dirtiest power station in the country remain open. It's just not viable with what's happening with climate change. And so we're absolutely calling for a just transition, and we think the government should put money in the budget. Also, yesterday I was calling in the Gippsland media for Labor's Regional Jobs Fund to put money towards a transition for the valley. So that was several hundred million dollars that was announced by the government to put forward for jobs in regional areas. Included some money for the valley for a dental prosthetics lab, which sounds like an interesting idea. But these can't just be thought bubbles. We actually need a holistic plan that the community can get behind. And so we're calling on the government to do that. But let's not also shy away from the fact that Hayswood absolutely needs to be replaced if we have any chance of solving dangerous climate change.
Mm. So I kind of wanted to move on now to questions of what the state government should be doing and what the federal government can be doing to support a transition in the Latrobe Valley. Perhaps I'll go to David now. Are you there, David?
Yes, I am. Hi. Sorry, I didn't hear what Wendy said, so I missed part of the conversation. But obviously, we know there's been a large campaign to federal level. There will be one coming up to the next federal budget in May to stop the billions of dollars of subsidies to the fossil fuel industry each year. Experts say it could be $8 to $10 billion a year. That ranges through a whole lot of tax concessions, appreciated, accelerated depreciation, subsidies for the mining industry, for the fuel they use, and so on. That might be all well and good, but I don't think any of us will be all that optimistic that the federal government is going to do what is necessary. I mean, it's one thing to have a policy ask; it's another thing to have the political power to be able to implement it. And I guess that's the whole question with this issue here. I mean, Luke van der Meulen from the unions in the valley says it's not a question of if Hayswood and these power stations will close, but when. And I would really add, and how. And it's the how that we need to.
I wanted to know in particular about clean coal. What is being put on the table at the moment, would influence things in the
Latrobe Valley? The government announced the details of. We know that was prompted by the closure of the car manufacturing in Geelong and the aluminium smelter there. I mean, I think it's important that we find whatever political muscle we can find to say this jobs fund shouldn't just be for Geelong, but should also be for the valley and other places as well. And that's the practical, concrete task that we need all to be heard on very loud.
Sorry, I think did you hear my last question? It may have not come through.
The one about what.
Sorry, clean coal. I was just asking a question. Yes, about where the federal government is sitting with pushing for clean coal.
Well, look, that's part of their mantra: clean coal, nukes, and all that sort of thing. I mean, the previous government in Victoria put up several tens of millions of dollars for three pilot projects. The fact is that at scale required clean coal has not been a success, and it doesn't look it's going to be. And I don't think there are any people anywhere who think it's actually a very viable strategy anymore. I mean, billions and billions of dollars have been put into clean coal around the world over the last decade or two, and we've got a few demonstration plants and not much more.
And this is happening alongside the rollback of the renewable energy target, of course.
Well, that's one of the problems. The Australian Energy Market Operator, which looks after the grid, came out last year and said we've got 8 gigawatts of excess capacity in the electricity sector. That's partly because people are being more careful with energy. It's partly because of people putting panels on their roofs and wind and so on. And some heavy polluters closing down. But that's 5 hazelwoods of excess capacity, and the operators of those power stations are going to the federal government asking for money to close them down because their profitability is down. So even within the market, there is a push to close it down, and the question, are these people just going to do it off their own bat where there'll be no transition plans? Or can we find the political will, the concrete political will and plans to do better than that?
We might just have a quick break. You're hearing from the Greens member for Melbourne, Ellen Sandel, the author of Climate Code Red, David Spratt, the national convener of the Australian Student Environment Network, Nick Carson, and the president of Voices of the Valley, Wendy Farmer, here with us on Wednesday breakfast.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
I might go to Wendy, can I hear from Wendy? Is Wendy here? Yes, fantastic. I was wondering what options are being put on the table. What is being discussed in the Latrobe Valley currently, aside from mine rehabilitation?
Well, this is the problem, not much. People are talking all the time about, or I should say, people are sitting around talking about transition and things need to be done, or some people are, some groups are. But nothing seems to be done. You know, we've had, I think, 4 or 5 different reports written up, which have cost a lot of money, but nothing physically has been done. And that's a frustrating part. People have to start putting these reports and putting transition into action and, you know, create jobs, spend money down in Latrobe Valley. The government took it away by privatising our mines. They need to really look at Latrobe Valley. We're now a marginal seat, which is just fabulous, and actually do something here.
Yeah, so are you calling for more funding from the state government to put into new projects for job creation?
Absolutely. At the moment, the government has $37.5 million of state funding and $37.5 million of federal funding set aside for clean coal projects. They haven't had anybody come and say, yes, we're going to put half that money in and we'll start a clean coal project. What date has it been said that these people have to take this money? If it's not taken by that date, why isn't it put into new industries? We know that we've got the people that Earthworker are wanting to come down here and start a factory. You know, can we get other people down in Latrobe Valley? There's no reason why we can't make the solar systems here, wind turbines, whatever needs to be made here. We make aircrafts in Latrobe Valley. You know, we design them and we send them overseas. It's time that the big industries are sent down to Latrobe Valley. And also, we've got a lot of farming area with agriculture and that. Let's use it. Let's encourage these farmers within agriculture, help them out, and let's be an exporter of really great food.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks, Wendy. I wanted to turn to Nick now to talk about renewable energy options and what what kind of things are being put forward, I think especially from Earthworker and other groups about community-led transitions.
Yeah, so I suppose ASEN sits at one of the more radical ends of the grassroots environment movement, doing a lot of direct action and this sort of stuff. So from our perspective, we're talking to local communities and grassroots groups a lot. And young people involved in ASEN are also involved in all kinds of other things, like Earthworker, which has been mentioned a couple of times, which is a workers' cooperative trying to get renewable energy manufacturing happening in the Latrobe Valley. And as part of our radical perspective and analysis, we're involved in things like Earthworker, like worker cooperatives and things like community renewables and this sort of stuff, because we have been down to the valley, we've been in the Hunter, we've been elsewhere in Australia, and what communities say time and time again, and Wendy might be able to corroborate this, and that is that these communities feel abandoned not only by the state, but also by the free market, and a lot of people don't have any confidence in private companies that own these power stations to make these transitions. People don't have confidence in the political will within the state government, and so people are getting involved in and advocating for and trying to secure funding for projects and solutions that the community controls. So it's community renewables, worker-owned and run cooperatives, manufacturing renewable energy or whatever it might be, and other projects like this, rather than, you know, more industry subsidies for private for-profit companies and this type of thing. So, yeah, lots of folks in ASEAN are involved in stuff like Earthworker, because we feel like that's the direction we need to be heading in, not only transitioning to like a for-profit, market-driven industry, even if that's in renewables, but we want to see the communities in these areas take full control and ownership over how this transition happens. And that includes the way in which they're communicated with and which they're consulted with by different groups and government in developing these transition plans. Like, it's not enough for a political party or whatever to come in and say, this is how we think we should transition, but we would advocate that environment groups, including ourselves, political parties, need to be letting these communities be at the forefront, be driving whatever transition plans are developed, and giving them complete control over their lives through that transition and post-transition.
Yeah, thanks so much. So I just wanted to turn to Ellen now. We know that the Labor Party is kind of flying blind with especially transition. It's kind of not even a word they seem to be wanting to touch. I wanted to know what the Greens Party is proposing in terms of policy for a community-led transition. What would that look like? What's there to support a community-led transition?
Well, Nick and Wendy are right. It needs to be led by the community. It's not enough for an outside force to come in and say, this is the jobs you can have, or this is the way it needs to go. And so that's why we're calling for, in the upcoming May budget, the state government budget this year, and this year is important, it needs to happen quickly, the government needs to provide money for a community-led transition plan. So that could be money for people to go down to the valley to consult, workshops, proper economic analysis of what kind of jobs are available there, but it does need to be led by the community, and that's what we're pushing for in the state budget. And obviously, any time the government announces money for regional jobs, like the Regional Jobs Fund yesterday, I'll be pushing for those to be spent on sustainable jobs in the valley. Let's remember that the state government, if we're going to close Hazelwood in time, and if we are going to replace it with sustainable jobs quickly and in the time that's required, the state government will play a role. And so we're advocating for the state government to play that role and to play it quickly. And that's why we're having the rally tomorrow on the steps of Parliament. And anyone who is passionate about this issue, passionate about climate change or just transitions, I encourage them to come down at 12:30 to make their voice heard.
And what's your expectations of the Labor government kind of putting some funding forward, aside from the Regional Jobs Fund, towards a transition in the Latrobe Valley?
Look, I wouldn't say that I'm incredibly optimistic about it. I think that Labor has failed the Valley. I think they've failed the Victorian and Australian and global community when it comes to climate change. We've seen them not put forward strong enough climate policies. It was really encouraging when they did talk about a phased transition out of Hazelwood in 2010, but really disappointing now that they seem to have abandoned that space. And that's why the Greens are there, to push them to have better climate change policies, because we know that it's what's needed. None of us will have a future if the worst impacts of climate change hit us, particularly in Australia and particularly in southern Australia, where things like the fire risk is so high. And so we absolutely need to push the Labor Party. The fact is that they're not going to just wake up one day and all of a sudden become climate champions. They need to be pushed into it through, we need to exercise our political power. So the community needs to be out there calling up their Labor members of Parliament, rallying on the steps of Parliament, all of these tactics, to tell Labor that actually there's a political imperative to do this, and you will lose your seats if you do not act on climate change.
I wanted to return to Nick to just talk about if we're relying on the state government to put funding forward for this transition to take place, and it seems that that's unlikely to happen, though of course it would be a huge boost to the renewable energy sector in that area. What is happening in the absence of support from the state?
Well, what we're seeing is projects like Earthworker. Earthworker did a crowdfunder and raised like over $80,000 and it's going through a process of corporatising a factory in Dandenong at the moment, which manufactures solar hot water. That's a great example of something outside of the purview of the state or the free market, that where the community is acting in its own interests and taking the initiative where that is absent in those other avenues. And you can see the same with community renewables, like with Hepburn Wind. You can see the same with Voices of the Valley and the political organising that's happening in the valley by the community, community-led, placing pressure on the politicians that are in state parliament, supposedly representing folks in the valley. So people out there in the world are doing so many different things to try and move in the direction that they need to be moving in. And this sort of stuff, I suppose, needs to be at the very least acknowledged and secondly, supported, you know, materially by people who have the resources. Folks who are in Parliament who can advocate stuff, or people who have, you know, ministers who have access to funding, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think Wendy had a question.
Sorry, it wasn't me, so it was someone else that
got it. Oh, sorry, it was David.
Look, I just want to jump in there. I mean, it's not just a matter of the state government putting up money. We know, for example, that now across Australia, including in Victoria, that putting solar panels on your roof is cheaper than buying power off the grid. It's called grid parity, and that's come about because of the really rapid falls in the cost of panels, and they're now saying within just a few years, panels and batteries in your house will be cheaper for people over the long term than buying power off the grid. So we know that that works. I mean, if we had, for example, a building code in Victoria that says every new house will have solar on its roof, then that would create a huge surge. I mean, and it would be across the state because houses are built everywhere. If you had a regulatory framework that says that every time a house is renovated or upgraded to more than a certain value, that making it sustainable in terms of panels and so on was part of the obligation, that would create a lot of jobs. So it's not just a matter of spending money. We have a regulatory framework at the moment. We've seen this renewable energy target, which is actually killing the industry rather than supporting it. It's killing the wind manufacturer in Portland rather than supporting it. So it's not just money. It's also giving priority to renewables in everything that the state government does, and that doesn't cost them a lot of money. It's more a regulatory approach as well as a spending money approach that would have an impact right across Victoria.
Thanks, David. Wendy, do you have any response for the other panellists?
I do, actually. Ellen said something quite interesting, and she said it needs to be a community-led transition that people come down to the valley and have a look at what is happening. I actually challenge her there in the sense I think it needs to be a community-led transition from the people in the valley with the assistance of people that know how to go with the transition. And I think that's really important now. I think our community is ready to really have a say in how we change. But I think, you know, we may need the assistance from people like Ellen and the others, but it needs to be led by our community. And, you know, we're ready. Voices of the Valley are ready to help or to work with a transition plan for Latrobe Valley.
Fantastic. I just wanted to ask you also, Wendy, there's a listening tour coming up in the Latrobe Valley that Voices of the Valley, Earthworker Cooperative and 350.org are organising from May 1st to May 3rd. Can you perhaps tell us a bit about that?
Okay, it's starting off with a very small group, and it's basically what we're finding, we've actually brought quite a few people into Latrobe Valley since the fire has happened, people that are interested in actually seeing how the community ticks. It has become quite interesting that when people come down to Latrobe Valley and spend a day here, they actually need to come back. They need to see what is going on because there's more of a story than just what we hear on, you know, radios and everything else. So what we've organised with this tour is that I think there's a group of about 20 or so coming down to have a look at Latrobe Valley, to speak with people that were affected by the coal fire, to speak with people that just live in this community and how the community thinks. As I said, if you say to our community, let's shut down the power stations, you will automatically get blocked. So what we, you know, what this all started with, we want the people environment groups, Greenies, to actually understand how our community ticks and work with us rather than against us.
Fantastic. So I might return to David. I think he had a bit more to discuss about state funding and regulation. There's another thing that I wanted to ask, perhaps an update on where feed-in tariffs are at the state level.
Yes, well, of course, feed-in tariffs is the money you get if you have solar panels on your roof and you have access during the day or the night. During the day, you don't need any feeds back into the grid. I have a personal experience at the moment of this where I pay roughly 33 cents for every kilowatt I get from my energy supplier. And by regulation, the amount I get for the power put back in is 6.4 cents. It was 8 cents. It's down to 6.4. There are some better historic arrangements, and that's clearly inequitable. So the power company's charging me 33 cents to give me 6 cents. So they must love my panels. I'm a profit-making thing for them. So clearly one of the things that needs to be done is to get the feed-in tariff back to something that represents fair value. It's not fair that the producer of electricity gets 6 cents and the big power companies get 27 cents. And, of course, that makes a big difference to the uptake of photovoltaics because the higher the feed-in tariff, the better the economics are for people thinking that whether they put it on their roof, they're going to get, you know, $50 back from the power they feed in the grid rather than $25. That's $300 a year over 10 years. That's $3,000. That's paid for half their system. So that, once again, is something that needs to be done. It was much higher. It needs to be done. It's not going to cost the state government a cent, but it will really change the dynamics of the industry. And that's one of the reasons why people are now wanting to put batteries in their houses, battery storage for their panels, and actually get off the grid because it's going to be cheaper to store your own electricity than buy it off the grid. And that, in some ways, is admirable. It's also probably inefficient because a lot of battery storage is not being used a lot of the time. But the regulation and the structure of energy retailing is so mad that we're getting these sort of perverse incentives where people just say, can I cut the wires to my house, please? And that's not good. I don't think that's good government policy in terms of the electricity grid.
Yeah, thanks, David. It sounds like there's a lot that can be done in terms of improved regulatory framework and alongside government funding. I wanted to turn to Ellen just for closing comments. We've only got a few more minutes and we're going to have to wrap up. Ellen, did you have anything more that you wanted to add to this discussion?
I think the points that David brought up about the kinds of regulations that we could have from the government are really great, but the fact of the matter is we need the political will for the Labor government to do it. And that's why I'm encouraging everyone to get out there, call your Labor politician, go to the rally tomorrow, do everything that you can to create that political pressure, because that's the only way that governments will change. And there are so many easy ideas out there that the government could change to create jobs in the valley, to increase the uptake of renewables, and to importantly replace our dirtiest power stations, but they're not going to do it unless they feel the pressure. So let's all work together, as Wendy said, and make them feel that pressure.
Yep, so the rally was going to take place tomorrow at 12:30 on the steps of Parliament.
12:30 on the steps of Parliament.
Great. I will just go to David for final comments.
Oh, look, I think Ellen's right. I mean, somebody once said to me, if you have policy without power, policy is just an idea in your head. I mean, we've got plenty of ideas in our heads. The question is, how do we make them real? And I've just been talking to some local climate groups. I live in the northern suburbs, and we've got plans now to work with other climate groups and try and go around every MP's office, Green, Liberal, Labor, the whole lot, and deliver letters and have little rallies outside their offices, and we really need to wind this up and engage people. As I said, you know, the idea of just transitions plans, it's, you know, it's one thing to say, it's another thing to find the political will to do it, and that's the hardest part of any campaign.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks, David. Wendy?
Yes, look, I agree with David there. You know, we've got to stop talking about transition, and we need to have something. We need something here now. Even if the Hazelwood was to go for 15 years, it's not a long time. We all know how fast a year goes as we get older. What are we leaving our future generations? stay in that, we've got to be very careful just closing down Hazelwood or any other mine, because we have big holes in the ground that need to be made safe. Our community can't go through a disaster that we went through last year. Again, you know, no community should have to put up with that. So I think it's really important that, you know, while we're talking about transition, we really need to talk about remediation of those mines to make it safe for the communities.
Thanks, Wendy. And Nick?
Yeah, I suppose I'd just say that alternatives exist, that they're out there, that they're being built as we speak, and lots of people are involved, and these alternatives need support, they need advocacy, they need money, they need to be acknowledged, and communities know what they need and are articulating what they want. And so people with political power, people with money, people with the means to be able to make these alternatives big really need to get behind them and support them. And environment groups really need to be listening more to, you know, communicating with and consulting with local communities and the alternatives that already exist that are out there trying to get started, trying to make this change happen.
Thanks, Nick. Thank you, Ellen. Thank you, David. And thank you to Wendy. I've been
Thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.